America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host and most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Elogi and Teresa Salmon. She's not here yet, but she will be joining us a little later on. So this week's episode is going to be for December 10th, 2021. I would say it's cold, but down here right now, you got a cold front moving in, which means a lot of rain. No ice yet, fortunately, so don't have to worry about that just yet. But yeah, we did have like a very dense fog advisory today. Just in general, it's that time of year. It's cold. It's still not quite winter technically yet, but considering how cold it is, it might as well be. So what are we going to be talking about this week? Well, obviously, we got yet another dump truck for COVID coming at you. It's kind of mixed news, but we'll be talking about it. We also have, of course, Jussie Smollett. His trial ended. We'll be telling you what the end of it is. And, oh, yeah, there's a rich asshole who had to turn over $70 million in stolen antiquities. And we'll tell you why. And, of course, we got some political news, including a certain representative who's resigning to be a part of Trump's media company. That seems to implicate that he either did something really bad that he's trying to run away from, or he doesn't really see much future in politics. We'll see. We also have some other stuff that happened as well, including some stuff about the Beijing Winter Olympics. And we'll be explaining all that because it's a lot of behind the scenes stuff, but we'll tell you all about it. But before we do all that, as always, we'll talk about what we've been doing this week. So, Chris, I haven't even let you get a word edgewise yet. How have you been doing?
Too bad.
Yeah.
Been doing some rearranging of stuff around here today.
Mm-hmm.
I moved my whole console and TV setup across the room here, so it's right next to my desk. Mm-hmm. So I have better and easier access to all this stuff for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, my TV and consoles were behind me, so I would have to use my whole switcher setup to reroute stuff to the PC through my Elgato for that stuff, which would be a pain in the ass sometimes, and you don't get to really enjoy like HDR and that kind of stuff, full 4K graphical quality kind of stuff to that at the same time. So it's one of the things I was always thinking about doing for the past week or so, but kept telling myself, oh, it's going to be pain in the ass, all this kind of stuff.
Oh,
then when I did it, it was like 20, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing too bad. So happy with how everything's looking, and I don't have any like long ass cables hanging around out in the middle of the open as much anymore. So that's good. Good improvement on that stuff. So that's been pretty nice. Let's see. For watching stuff, I watched the new Hawkeye, caught up on that.
Mm.
And I did have one issue with this episode. So the entire series is kind of tangentially about people with hearing issues. Hawkeye has some major hearing loss, so he uses a hearing aid. The main villain at this point is deaf. They had a bit like halfway through this fourth episode where Hawkeye is kind of taking off his hearing aid so he can go to sleep. And in that process, the audio just starts getting very weird and loud and kind of bassy in a way that kind of triggered my tinnitus and just started kind of being a bit more painful than it really should be. So I had to kind of turn it down while I was watching and listening to that. Yeah. 15-second sequence, whatever. It was kind of annoying to see, but it wasn't too big of a deal. But yeah, that was a weird whole thing with the audio mixing, where it's like, this didn't need to be as loud as it was, or even have to be designed this way. But that's sometimes the way that Hollywood does things when they try to give normal people the experience of being hard of hearing. And sometimes they go a little overboard.
Mm.
But yeah, the fourth episode, pretty good. Just kind of continuing along with the trend stuff. There was a whole story about a particular character in the MCU kind of coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird, but also caused a bit of controversy because they were sharing pictures of themselves doing this or from this episode, and people mm-hmm. were complaining about spoilers kind of thing. And so because it became a big story, I saw that before I saw the episode, so I was spoiled on it.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, not that it seems to be a major thing right now, but it would be nice to not know it, but whatever. But yeah, earlier today I was just watching some Christmas stuff on Disney Plus. So there's Home Alone, watch that. Still fun show.
Mm-hmm.
And all that, and kind of definitely is more of a real kind of movie compared to the new one.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's no real criminals doing anything, just stupid people reacting to a misunderstanding that they don't realize what's mm-hmm. going on,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. So, but here you got actual criminals, you know, you got Kevin who's afraid of his basement and this neighbor mm-hmm. that he doesn't quite mm-hmm. understand, that kind of stuff. So a lot of
mm-hmm.
like real things there, but still fun watch. I also watched some of the Mickey Christmas stuff that's on there as well. There's the classic Mickey's Christmas Carol,
mm-hmm.
Which is almost 40 years old at this point.
Yeah, and somehow it's still good.
Yeah, it's good because it's like 25 minutes long. Keeps going
yeah.
at a pretty quick pace. Doesn't overstay.
Right to the point. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it uses the various Mickey characters for its various characters. So Mickey plays the I forget what his name is, the guy that works with Scrooge.
Mm-hmm.
Conveniently, they already have a character named Scrooge, so they just use him, Scrooge McDuck, for that. But, you know, there's Goofy, Pete, the giant dude that's get used in various things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pretty simple, but a classic sort of holiday special there.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the more recent, I think it's called Duck the Halls. It's like a Mickey Mouse Christmas special with the sort of more recent Mickey Mouse series
mm-hmm.
that I haven't really seen much of it, but it is a weird-ass series.
Oh, yeah.
Very much taking cues from sort of modern adult animation styles mm-hmm. and story and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't get very raunchy, but it's they do a lot of stuff that's like, oh, they're doing like the weird sense of added detail to it that like a Ren and Stimpy had without all the baggage from that. But yeah, that one features the whole crew that is kind of hanging out for the holidays, but then Donald and Daisy have to leave to go south because they're ducks and they can't handle the cold.
Mm-hmm.
Which they show like the migration is like a road trip of sorts with all the ducks in town that seems to suggest that the town they're in only has three species of citizens: ducks, dogs, and mice.
Mm-hmm.
which is a very weird thing to happen. But Donald decides, as they are on the highway, that he's going to stay and tell everybody to go fuck off, basically, because he wants to actually enjoy Christmas for once, because he's only grown up having to leave just as everything's starting to get Christmassy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty fun, because they kind of get into, like, oh, here's the reasons why, you know, birds can't handle, or, like, ducks can't handle Christmas weather.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stays, and he's just, his body's, like, failing him progressively as he keeps going through. To the point that it gets to, like, Christmas night, and he is, like, on the verge of, I guess, dying. That Santa comes through the chimney, and they're like, ah, we gotta steal your fucking sleigh and get him to the south. And just, like, crash it at the resort that that Daisy and the nephews and Scrooge are hanging out at. All the other ducks in the Mickey universe. Which has a whole thing where Goofy finds this, like, I think it looks like a cooked, you know, chicken. It's like, oh no, I found Donald. He's been cooked in the crash, kind of thing. But then they find him elsewhere. And all that, and they find out we can celebrate Christmas when it's not cold. Anywhere. You know, because you got friends and family with you. That's how you celebrate. It's not the weather, but that is a fun little special. It's similar to, like, Mickey's Christmas Carol. It's like 25 minutes long, so it's not super long. But now I kind of want to go watch the Mickey Mouse series that this sort of is a special built off of. So that is a fun time there. But yeah, that's been most of the watching stuff. I've been playing some other things. I got Cruisin' Blast from the Black Friday sale. I've been playing that on my Switch, the sort of arcade racer that is sort of the latest entry of the Cruisin' series.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the original was sort of an arcade racer. This one is the sort of adaptation of it at home, which feels, I don't know, I forget what the Cruisin' games were really like, but it feels like a Burnout in some ways, because takedowns are a big part of it. You can just run into other vehicles and, you know, knock them off the track, essentially. Knock them out of commission for a bit. It happens more automatically when you're doing drifting, for whatever reason. And each race is just pure chaos, the way it all unfolds. So it's pretty fun. This seems like the main sort of progression they have here is there are these tours that are like, you know, a tour in Mario Kart, you know, four tracks that you're playing, but you don't get points for how you finish. You just do each of the races, and based on how you finish, it awards you, you know, a medal for how well you did. The nice thing they do is they let you, if you fuck up in a race, they let you just restart it. You keep all the collectibles and money and other bonuses you get with that. So you can kind of build up a good bit of cash and all that if you're doing this for a bit for some of these races, because some of them are tricky to win, especially if you're trying to level up vehicles and all that kind of stuff, because the vehicles have levels, I think up to level 5. The way you get experience out of races, it's pretty quick for the most part. I've done like two tours, and the first vehicle I picked, and I think they're all real cars, the initial batch of stuff to it, but I've seen what one of the unlocks are, and it's like, oh, there's a helicopter, and there's an elephant, and they go really fucking weird at certain points if you could unlock them all. But yeah, there's like keys you find. Just getting golds on the tours helps you unlock stuff, all that kind of stuff. So there's a good bit of stuff there. The unlocks for the vehicles are just kind of like, oh, you can get different cosmetic unlocks. And I think one of them one or the two last level unlocks are increasing your engine stuff or whatever stat stuff. The first couple are just cosmetic stuff. So it's like, oh, you got neon all over your car, neon strips, that kind of stuff. But it's a pretty fun racing game. I'm going to keep playing it. Yeah. It has sort of a killer menu song that plays as it starts. So,
oh, I know. I've heard it.
Yeah. It's pretty well done. Let's see. Also been playing some more Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm in Chapter 3, which is the chapter that they showed off in the E3 demo. We're going to Lady Hellbender's fortress. I think I'm just a bit before going to the actual fortress, but I've been doing all the stuff leading up to it, enjoying it. Story stuff's still pretty good. And yeah, the interesting way they have different choices, because I think the whole thing they showed off there is like, oh, there's this gap you have to get across, and Drax offers to throw a rocket across it. And so you can be like, oh yeah, sure, do that. And he gets just super pissed at everybody for just treating him like shit. But you can say, no, we're not doing that, and just go find an alternate route through, and nobody gets super pissed. Though then I left like a collectible there or something I couldn't get back. So that was, it's like, if I just pissed Rocket off, I'd have a bridge that I could go back and forth. But no, finding the other way was the kind of let me stranded. So there's choices to be made. Nothing really huge, but so far, but that's some fun times. Also been playing some more Fortnite. Managed to get a nice second win, which was pretty good. Yeah, getting the hang of the whole thing. So still working on the quest stuff, and there's still mechanics that I didn't even understand what they were, because they just don't explain certain things very well. I'd have to Google it and find out from people that do articles for like, oh, here's all the new things. Because they were showing it off during the Game Awards. I'm like, wait, what? That's in there? And explain like the crown stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's what the crown stuff for. And just, I was just like, randomly just having like a crown icon show up in my head was like getting a golden glow to it. I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, you kill certain people and they drop it so you can pick it up. And I'm like, I don't, what the hell is this? But yeah, that's still fun. They just added the Gears characters to it. A couple of Gears characters. So that's fun there. And also been playing some Halo Infinite. I basically just got to the open world part of it, which is like 2 hours in. Up to that point, you're basically playing Halo, traditional Halo. Except you have like a grappling hook that, at least initially, is kind of an grappling hook. I compare it to Just Cause, that series, the way their grappling hooks work, where if you're grappling to, you know, side of a building or something, you get a nice jump out of it at the end that lets you have a better chance of grabbing the ledge. And here, if you fuck up the aim, you got to deal with the consequences. Even though that means you, instead of going up to the top of a ledge or something, you go, you know, going right under it, swinging right under it in a way that's just like, oh, I fucked this up. And there were sequences where I just kept dying because I was trying to do that to get around. But you don't necessarily have to at times, but it's a pretty fun way to get around when you start getting the hang of it. But yeah, that's Halo Infinite so far. But yeah, that is pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Well, using my, still, you know, getting use of my, PSN account, my PS Now account, because I'm pretty much kind of stuck with that, at least until after the holidays. I downloaded the, Borderlands, the Handsome Collection, which, you know, has both Borderlands, the pre-sequel, and Borderlands 2. And it's been a few years since I played Borderlands 2. Yeah, it's quite enjoyable, especially when you compare it to the first Borderlands, which was very, like, it had interesting ideas, but it was very much a game that was it was not finished in parts that were important, at least story-wise, which is kind of the reason why Borderlands 2 is considered such a big deal, because it took sort of the original sort of Rhoda, very basic, you know, aspects of the first game, and it did a good deal to grow them out. Giving all the original player characters a much needed dose of actual character, adding some very good parts to the new cast, basically perfecting the original gameplay. And in general, it just looked and played better than the first game did. It's just funny in that sort of sociopathic humor kind of way. I forgot, though, that game, at least when you're starting out, doesn't have any fast travel. Yeah, that's why the vehicles and stuff are so important, because otherwise you're doing a lot of trudging around on foot. But, you know, it's still Borderlands 2. It's still a lot of fun. And the Prey sequel actually isn't bad either. My only problem with that one is that they brought in the oxygen component, because since the pre-sequel, a lot of it takes place on the moon, it means that, you know, there's a huge places where you don't have oxygen, so you have to worry about making sure that you've got a steady supply of oxygen with you, which can really hard, you know, remember, this is Borderlands. It's the chaotic first-person shooter where there's a lot of shit happening at once. Oxygen kind of brings that down.
You have to kind of balance just playing the game versus managing your oxygen.
Yeah. Especially early on. The other thing I decided to download and give a try was Frostpunk, which is, I mean, you've played Frostpunk, so.
Yeah, it's a city builder, but in a frozen post-apocalypse.
Yeah. Basic scenario is that sometime in the late 1880s, a rather apocalyptic atmospheric event happens that causes a global winter. It's implied that it was caused by like a combination of like the eruption of Mount Krakatoa, some sunspots, and some other stuff they never really conclusively say, but basically you are building up what is thought to be the last city on Earth in the middle of this giant ice wall, where you erect a generator and then you essentially are building your city around the generator. And since, you know, it's frozen, that means you have to keep everybody warm, which means the number one priority in the game that you have is making sure that you have enough coal at all times to keep the generator running. And the thing is, starting out, you basically have to basically send people out into the snow to collect from piles of coal that are sort of around in the general area. And you also have to get people to go out and, like, salvage wood from, like, wooden crates and metal from, like, old derelicts and stuff that are stuck in the snow. And, you know, at the very beginning, it's very rough going because you're having to, like, balance, you know, making sure you can get enough materials to get started. And then you have to build housing, you know, which starting out is just tents. And stuff, you know, eventually like a cookhouse and a medical post and the, you know, the research stations. I don't know what they're, I can't remember what they're called in the game, but basically they're the ones where you research new technologies that you can bring in and upgrade to various stuff. A friend, someone recommended when I was starting out that I should actually build a couple of research stations first when I first start, just so I can, you know, get it so that I can quickly, like, get to, like, you know, research things like, you know, more effective gathering, and then those, I can't remember what they're called, like steam posts or steam towers, basically things that act as like general heaters that can, you know, that can heat outside of the general area that the generator itself heats up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suck at this game. I really, really do.
Yeah. It's tough early on.
Oh yeah. It's tough in general because the whole game is basically just nonstop tension. Because you're always, you know, at risk of running out of that one thing that you need in order to progress just at the wrong time. Everything from, you know, just like you're at that point where you're like, yeah, I need to build more medical posts because people are starting to get sick and, you know, you don't have enough wood at that particular time, so you got to get people to go out and get wood. But if you go out and get people to get wood, that means more of them might get sick. And then there's also always the risk that the generator's going to go out. And I found out that can sneak up on you very quickly if you're not keeping an eye on the coal level, because the coal reserves that you get your hands on early on, they can run out pretty quick if you're not, you know, careful watching them.
Yeah.
Which is why one of the things that you might want that I had somebody recommend, one of the things you might want to invest in early on when you get the chance is, I forgot what they're called. They're called like, I think I've heard them called like coal thumpers. They're basically these huge machines that you can get so that they will, you know, thrust under the earth so you can get into like underground, you know, reserves of coal so you'll have a more steady coal supply. And then there's also like, you know, building up like resource huts next to where these things are so people can spend more time there and get stuff more efficiently. It's just a bunch of different stuff happening at once, and it's very easy for it to get all out of hand if you're not careful. I'm getting better at it, I think. I've had to restart several times because shit gets to a point where I'm like, fuck it, I might as well just start over.
Yeah, you learn how to be more efficient with your building and all that.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of a built-in feature, is that you're pretty much going to fail spectacularly the first time you play this. So it's successive playthroughs, you get better at it. Other than that, also on streaming, I finished Arcane. God damn, if that entire series was not fucking perfect. Once again, I will say it until the day I die, you do not need to have played League of Legends to understand or even enjoy Arcane. It stands alone as a fantastic series on its own. The only thing I will say is that if you do know anything about League of Legends, you have a good idea of what characters will make it to the end of it, because they eventually end up becoming champions in League of Legends. And I think, you know, the show creators kind of understood that as well, which is why they make the actual show so damn compelling. Other than that, I got a subscription to Disney Plus now, so I've also started watching DuckTales 2017. Yeah, it's good. It's damn good.
Yeah.
I love how they've been sort of slowly like took the entire Disney afternoon and kind of wrapped it up into a single universe. Because, yeah. You've got characters from, obviously, the DuckTales original series. You've also got characters from Darkwing Duck. You got characters from Goof Troop. You got characters from Tailspin. Bonkers shows up there at one point. It's a pretty good work on their own. Other than that, just general highway hijinks and holiday hijinks and shit. We got our Christmas tree up last week, and a fucking dog will not keep his snout out of it. He must really love the smell. Because we'll
probably
be
the most interesting smell he's had for a while.
Yeah, we'll be sitting there, and the TV will be there, and it's relatively quiet, and then suddenly start hearing sort of tinkling in the background, and then you realize, oh, that's the sound of him, rooting around in the tree and all the decorations clinking against each other. But he's, and Mom hasn't gotten it out yet because we haven't gotten a bridge yet. There's also this thing that it's like a post with a sort of wooden, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer head on the top of it that we attach like Christmas cards to as they come in. And last year we brought that in for the first time and he freaked the fuck out. And I'm not sure if Mom's going to bring it down this year, because the first time we brought that in, he barked at that thing all goddamn day. Like, I'm serious. Like, for 12 straight hours, he did not stop barking at that damn thing. Let's see. We are... Yeah, about 15 days away from Christmas now. So, yeah, we'll see. But, I guess until Teresa gets here, we'll be moving on from another segment. Unless you got anything else you wanted to add, Chris?
Really? We got a big winter storm happening, though it's not the kind of winter storm you would expect. It's going to rain a lot, and then we're going to have winds that they're saying is like, regularly 45 to 60 miles an hour.
Oh, so like hurricane strength winds. Well, not hurricane, but I guess tropical storm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like supposed to get to a high of like 62.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's like, what the fuck is going on? I was supposed to get about 62 around noon. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 60 degrees outside right now, and it's like almost 9 o'clock at night. So.
Yeah, I did not have the heat on most of the day, and the temp in here was still getting warm.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what the hell? It's December.
Yeah.
Even had the window open for a bit, and was like, it must just be that warm.
Yeah.
Even though it's not
climate change. Yeah, it's partly
also
climate
just
change.
Also having all these electronics in
that too.
Part of the room, as well as a human being, helps
keep
the place pretty well.
Yeah, that's true. Well, all right. Well, I guess in that case, we'll move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. Chris, I want to ask you a question. Are you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Larry Flint?
Hustler.
And there was also a movie that was made about him. If, in case you ever saw it, it was called The People vs. Larry Flint.
Nope.
You never saw it? Woody Harrelson was in it. He plays him. Larry Flint was a divisive person, to say the least. He is infamous for being probably the first American publisher to publish a men's magazine that showed like explicit close-up of women's genital area. Unlike, Playboy, Hugh Hefner's thing, which was mostly, cheesecake, tee-hee-hee, oh, my boobs are out, how embarrassing, that kind of thing. And you had Penthouse along with it, Bob Guccione's thing, which was mostly a complete clone of Playboy, although it tried to sort of be slightly hipper, I guess. And it also bankrolled Caligula, which is probably the most explicit porno movie ever made in the history of cinema. But that's another story. Flint's publication, Hustler Magazine, was... Oh, boy. Let's just say that there was no boundary that was considered too taboo to cross. His magazine was filled with all types of just debauchery and some would say outright misogyny and even racism and anti-Semitism because, you know, it was the 70s and the 80s and, you know, un-PC humor was at that stage where it hadn't quite gotten to the internet, so it was still largely, you know, cloaked behind, you know, the dirty magazine stand. But if there is one good thing, like one feather in Flint's cap that we can talk about that has actually been a boon for American culture, it's this. Larry Flint is the reason that you can publish a caricature or a parody or a satire of figure that a reasonable person would not have interpreted as factual, and you cannot be sued by the object of that satire for any kind of emotional damages. And the reason is because, well, it's just one of those really dumb fucking stories that somehow managed to make its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. So here's the story, basically. So in 1983, Hustler put out its magazine for that particular month. And one of the things it had was a satire that was... Okay, so here's one of the things you need to know. At the time that this was printed, there was a wine company called Campari, and they had a ad campaign going around that was called "A Famous Person Talks About Their First Time." Now, in the campaign, they were basically took the form of like interviews, basically, and they would be where the person would be talking about the first time they drank Campari wine, but it was worded in such a way that it sounded like it wasn't like the first time they had drank Campari wine. Instead, it sounded like it was the first time they had, yeah. Well, Hustler was one of a couple of different magazines at that time that published their own sort of parody about this particular ad campaign. And the subject of their particular ad was none other than a man by the name of the Reverend Jerry Falwell. Now, Chris, we're both the same age, so I guess you're familiar with who Jerry Falwell was.
Yeah, he helped found Liberty University.
Yes, you may know his son.
Yeah.
Yeah. He founded Liberty University. That was one of a number of things he did. He also founded the Moral Majority. He also... was a sort of a pioneer in what were called Halloween hell houses. He was also a pioneering televangelist, and he's also the man who is generally credited with bringing the conservative Christian fold into American politics, you know, after the 1960s. As you can quite imagine, he was basically the epitome of the Bible-thumping asshole. He was notoriously homophobic, notoriously anti-abortion. He didn't have a whole lot of good things to say about other religions. One of the things he tried to hide was the fact that he got his start as a pro-segregation preacher. Yeah, that was one of the things he was involved in. So as you could, oh yeah, and he was also one of those people trying to censor any type of media that he didn't like, be it books, movies, music. So as you can imagine, he would be the perfect target for a parody from Hustler magazine. Keep in mind that Larry Flint back in the 70s went through a brief period where he became a born-again Christian, so he kind of had probably come in contact with Falwell at some point before then. That's another story entirely. But so this is what happened. So they do their Campari parody, and here was the whole angle. It was basically Jerry Falwell, and actually, you know what? There's actually a picture of it right here in Wikipedia that has a piece of it. They have a picture of it on the article. But it was him talking about his first time, except in this case, it's not actually about him sneakily talking about about drinking Campari for the first time. No, it's about him getting drunk off his ass and losing his virginity to his mother in an outhouse. Because of course it was. And it basically ends with him like, well, hell yeah, Campari. Do you think I can preach all the stupid shit I preach sober? Yeah. So that went, and here's something also that's important to point out is that at the very bottom of the image that was published, it said in bold letters, fiction, ad, and personality parody. So, you know, it was making very clear this was not a real Campari ad, this was a parody. So, at some point, somebody who worked for Liberty University, heard about this. They got a hold of the magazine. They went up to Falwell's office and they showed him the ad, and he basically reacted probably as you would expect he did. So he decided to sue Flint, Hustler magazine, and his distribution company in the United States District Court for the Western District of Virginia for libel, invasion of privacy, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. Some things happened in between it getting all the way to Supreme Court. The court granted Flint's motion for summary judgment on the claim of invasion of privacy. And the remaining two charges proceeded to trial. The jury ruled against Falwell on the libel claim. And as for intentional infliction of emotional stress, they decided to rule in favor of Falwell and award him $150,000 in damages. Flint then appealed to the Fourth Circuit. The Fourth Circuit affirmed. Then some more appeals happened, and eventually it made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. Now, at the time, who was on the Supreme Court? Now, some of these will be names you might remember. The Chief Justice was William Rehnquist. Associate Justice were William J. Brennan, Byron White, Justice Thurgood Marshall, Harry Blackmun, John P. Stevens, Sandra Day O'Connor, Antonin Scalia, and Anthony Kennedy. Do any of those names sound familiar? Because you'll notice a lot of those people stayed on the court for a long time. So you're thinking, and keep in mind, a lot of these people were actually pretty conservative, just to remind you of who the people were on the Supreme Court at the time. So arguments were made, both sides made their arguments, and then eventually the Supreme Court came back with their decision. It was a unanimous decision in favor of Hustler magazine Larry Flint. Here's what the opinion of the court was. At the heart of the First Amendment is the recognition of the fundamental importance of the free flow of ideas and opinions on matters of public interest and concern. The freedom to speak one's mind is not only an aspect of individual liberty and thus a good unto itself, but also is essential to the common quest for truth and the vitality of society as a whole. We have therefore been particularly vigilant to ensure that individual expressions of ideas remain free from governmentally imposed sanctions. The First Amendment envisions that the sort of robust political debate that takes place in a democracy will occasionally yield speech critical of public figures who are intimately involved in the resolution of important public questions or, by reason of their fame, shape events in areas of concern to society at large. So basically, this all decided to rule in favor of Flint, and they actually cited precedent. Back in the old days, the famous cartoonist Thomas Nast, who, amongst other things, is the guy who is responsible for creating our popular image of Santa Claus, he famously skewered Boss Tweed, who was a famous political boss in New York in the Victorian era. And clearly, Falwell was a public figure that was equal to the likes of Boss Tweed, and because he was a public figure who, on top of that, was also intimately involved with American politics at the time. Remember, this is the Reagan era. He was absolutely suitable for the purposes of this First Amendment case, and therefore a absolute suitable target for Flint's satire. Because the district court found in favor of Flint on the libel charge, there was no dispute as to whether the parody could be understood as describing facts about Falwell or events in which he can participate in. Accordingly, because the parody did not make false statements that were implied to be true, it could not be the subject of damages under the New York Times actual malice standard. And it's because of that now you can basically make any kind of outlandish parody or satire of any public figure that exists in America and, frankly, everywhere else within the United States of America, and they can't do shit to you. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, with that out of the way, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have our assholes of the weekend. We've got a few, so get ready and, strap in, because holy shit, it was definitely a week for assholes. The first one we've got is this former hedge fund manager who was required to turn in over $70 million in stolen antiquities so that he could avoid trial.
Yep. This guy named Michael Steinhardt, a former hedge fund manager that had about 180 stolen antiquities.
Mm-hmm.
Things that included, a ceremonial cup from Turkey in the shape of a stag's head, three death masks likely unearthed from the mountains of Israel, dating back to 6,000 or 7,000 BC, which means they're like 8,000 to 9,000 years old, an ancient Greek chest for human remains, normal things that people come across, that kind of stuff. He's also known for his work as co-founder of Birthright Israel. He pays for young Jewish adults to visit Israel. Has denied any wrongdoing in acquiring the antiques. He said many of the dealers who sold him items claimed that they were the object's lawful owners. So he's claiming innocence of a sort, but I can't imagine that you have to be that naive to acquire this much stuff and be like, there's no way any of this stuff was ever stolen. But yeah, they will be returned to their rightful owners in the 11 countries where they originated.
Mm.
And yeah, they decide not to prosecute because he returned them so that all this stuff could be just returned more quickly and all that kind of stuff. The witnesses and sources they got to unveil all this stuff can stay a secret. Probably for future use for other people.
Mm.
But yeah, that's good to see. He gets to lose this shit he probably paid pretty good money for.
Awesome.
Now go to the people that should have them.
The shit it actually belongs to. Mm. Yeah, there's a whole underground industry of of people buying and selling stolen antiquities. And, shit like this happens a lot more frequently than you would think it does. Moving on, Kellogg's. Now, I'm not sure how many of you folks folks know about this because the media doesn't really talk about it as much as they should, but there's been a bunch of Kellogg's workers that have been on strike recently for the last, I think, 2 months. And yeah. Recently, they were getting close on working out a new contract. And then at the last minute, the union realized, wait, this is bullshit. This isn't acceptable. The strike continues. So in order to keep production going, Kellogg's is doing that one thing that they should never fucking do if they ever want people to respect them again. They're hiring scabs.
Yep, and permanent scabs.
Yeah. Now, I've made my opinion on scabs on this show many times, but I will make it clear. If you're a scab, you're a fucking piece of shit. Like, I can understand a person who is desperate enough that they might do scab labor. But also remember that there are whole companies whose whole purpose is to provide scab labor to companies like Kellogg's. Well, Kellogg's instead did something really fucking stupid. They decided to put out applications online. And so what happened is that all the people on Reddit flooded their hiring applications to take it down. Somebody even came up with a piece of software that can basically write fake applications, dozens of them every 24 hours.
Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous the point that they're going to on this stuff, because I think the big issue still was that the veteran workers at Kellogg's, these plants, did not want to sell out the younger, newer employees.
Yeah.
Because they were going to create this system that essentially, like, if you've been there like 4 years or longer, you could become like a permanent, have a permanent position or whatever they call them at various places. I think I've heard like hired in, that kind of stuff, where you can stick around all year long. The younger ones would be put in their own category that can never reach that point. And the vets were basically willing to sacrifice any benefits for them to help out the new guys, which is a great thing to see. There are probably times in these kind of negotiations where people are just in a, I need to get mine, fuck the other people kind of mode. But yeah, there's also talk that they are going to also be sending the jobs they threatened to send to Mexico, to Mexico anyway. And all this. So I don't know how permanent some of these jobs are going to be. But yeah, that is, they didn't make a good enough deal. And now they are basically saying, you know, fuck it. We're just going to, you know, try and get people to cross the line. Picket line.
And so far they're not succeeding. So yeah.
Yeah.
But next up, Jussie Smollett, he was accused of staging a fake hate crime. He had claimed that he had been attacked by some racist homophobes, and it came out later that he had apparently hired these two African guys to help him stage it. And because of this guy, now all those assholes constantly claim that all hate crimes are fake.
Found him guilty of felony disorderly conduct for staging a fake hate crime 3 years ago. For claiming that two men attacked him, wrapped a noose around his neck, and doused him with bleach in downtown Chicago, yelling racist and homophobic slurs. And that Smollett repeatedly lied to the police about the incident. They found him guilty on 5 of the 6 counts he faced, which related to a false report he gave on the day of the attack. He was acquitted on one account of giving a false report to police at a later date. He faces up to 3 years in prison. Sentencing hearing has not been scheduled just yet. But yeah, that good news for the brothers that were hired to do this.
Yeah.
That have been dealing with the backlash of it all since then without any sort of trial to show that maybe they weren't the terrible people that people found out about 3 years earlier. Which I guess they're bodybuilders too.
Yeah.
Which I guess that's a good people to go for if you're trying to stage some sort of attack.
Pretty much. And
bodybuilders are great at like attacking people. They're not really built for that.
Yeah. And now some assholery from the Supreme Court. They have decided that, okay, so you guys remember that dumbass Texas abortion law where they're basically making people out to be basically bounty hunters for anyone that has a abortion after, what was it, 6 weeks, I think, or 9 weeks?
Six.
Yeah. And it's clearly like on very shaky ground. Well, the Supreme Court decided that they will allow people to continue challenging the abortion law, but they have declined to actually do anything else about it.
Yeah, this is them like doing the most minimal amount of effort on this subject. So that's kind of a whole thing. And they're definitely members of the Supreme Court that are very aware of the fact that they are walking on thin ice here. With the way that they're potentially going to handle this thing.
Yeah.
And potentially just ruin the integrity of the courts for decades to come. The way that it got packed in the past couple of years.
Yeah. And they still haven't ruled on that Mississippi thing yet either. And part of me is wondering if they're intentionally trying to drag it out until the end of this session.
I don't know. I think they'll have to finish it before then.
Yeah, but they're waiting until the last minute so that they can, I guess, make their escape afterwards.
Yeah.
But, it's infuriating. But, more like going to hiding, I guess. But,
yeah, but.
Yeah. And now some shit from my home state of Georgia. The Georgia GOP has overhauled the Spalding County Board of Education to remove all black Democrat members and replace them with white GOP members. Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah. Very much going all out. And this is not the only county they've done it in. They've done it in a few over the past few weeks here. Because they are going all in on just making sure they can steal the next election.
Yep.
As the general changes in voting make it harder for black people to vote, putting people in charge that, if necessary, will overturn elections. Pretending some very dark stuff going on. And I don't... Stacey Abrams is going to have her work cut out for her to get... an honest win this time around because she got it stolen last time.
Oh, yeah. We haven't mentioned that yet. Stacey Abrams is running for governor again. And, on top of that, Brian King is probably going to be primaried this time by David Perdue. You may remember him as the guy who lost his Senate seat.
Yeah.
And is the reason why Georgia became a blue state. So... Yeah. Fortunately, it's not all assholes. We do have some heroes to talk about. So you guys remember the whole Charlottesville Unite the Rally that ended in the murder of one person and the accidental death of, I think, two other people? The reason you may remember that whole rally happened in the first place was because Charlottesville has a huge Robert E. Lee statue that was obviously controversial, as you can probably guess, and people have been, more and more of these statues have been coming down, and that statue was one of the statues that helped sort of kickstart it, at least in the Trump era, anyway. Well, it's down now, and it's soon be melted down into public art. So, hip hip hooray.
Yep. Yep, turning into a public arts project after receiving a city council approval this week. I'm not sure what the... So the Jefferson School American Heritage Center, a local Black-led nonprofit, will take on the project, which it has named Swords Into Plowshares. The New York piece will help engage the Charlottesville community and how inclusion can be represented through art in public space, a group says. So, curious to see how it turns out.
Yes, we'll see. And this is the other one that was also a big deal. Workers for a Starbucks in Buffalo, is that New York? Yep, voted to unionize with their first U.S. union. This is the first Starbucks-owned company store in the United States to actually vote to unionize.
Yep. They had, this is three Buffalo area stores held separate union elections. Baristas and shift supervisors from one store voted unionized 19-8. Others from the second store rejected it 12-8. Third store failed to reach a verdict and faces a legal battle. There are 15 votes were cast for unionization and 9 against, while 7 votes were challenged. Most of the challenges came from the union, which argued that some workers who voted weren't regular employees at the location. So yeah, it's one of the highest profile union wins for U.S. restaurant workers. Which you probably are not surprised to know are among the least unionized in the country.
Yep. They are notoriously anti-union. And they are actually not reacting very well to the fact that this union push succeeded. Now it means it might spread.
Yeah, people realize there might actually be some recourse against the shitty conditions or people that are in charge of their locations. And guess what? There's Starbucks everywhere.
Yep.
So congrats, Starbucks. You set this all yourself. They have almost 9,000 stores in the U.S. So roughly like, is that what, like 180 per state? Something like that. Which is, that's a lot. Though it's buoyed by, you know, places like New York and California where there would be more than the average versus, you know, your more Wyomings and Montanas and all that are going to be more sparse, but hopefully it keeps going and sets a precedent for all sort of fast food restaurant workers.
So let's hope this spreads. They were originally calling it Striketober, but it's now extended all the way into December. So let's keep it up. All right. So moving on from there, it is now time for the proper show proper. And to start us off, well, yep, here we go. We're going back into the alleyway where the garage door, beep, beep, here comes the COVID-19 dump truck. We only got two COVID stories for this week, and the news is mixed. The first one, we got some good news here. Canadian biotech firm is getting positive results from their plant-based vaccine. That's good.
This is a whole neat thing that is going on where they have created a vaccine that uses, let's see, what's it called here? A virus-like particle that's produced in plant cells that were given genetic instructions to make the coronavirus spike protein. So the whole thing is not made from plant proteins and or anything like that. It is sort of devising parts of it from things that grow in plants and make it maybe something more, I don't know, natural. I don't know what the aim is really for the whole company. They also have like an experimental flu vaccine that is developed in a plant that's related to tobacco, which is almost kind of getting to close to the plot of Far Cry 6.
Yeah.
There's like a cancer drug that is created out of like tobacco plants, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Down in their fake Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they have been doing some testing. The study had more than 24,000 volunteers in 6 countries. Half got the vaccine, half a placebo.
Mm-hmm.
When they reached approximately 165 cases of COVID-19 among participants, a review of the results was triggered, saying we had about 74 to 78% efficacy to prevent moderate and severe disease.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, looking at all COVID-19 cases, it was closer to about 70% efficacy, including, you know, mild cases. So not perfect, but pretty good start.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the cases are either Delta or Gamma variants. Omicron hadn't yet appeared on the scene when the study was conducted.
Yeah.
So that's one caveat here. But yeah, this would not require this stuff to be stored in freezers.
Mm-hmm.
So make it easier to transport around if it does get to the point of being something that countries allow to be used.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. And also we have gotten, this is our second story, we have gotten, the studies from South Africa and Germany on vaccine effectiveness against Omicron, and, well, the results of those tests are now out.
It seems like the big takeaway here is that if you don't have the booster yet, your protections are not going to be super great. It doesn't mean it's going to be bad. They say here, on average, the antibodies were 40 times less potent against Omicron than against the variant circling in the summer of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The virus contains many mutations already known to weaken the power of the antibodies made by the immune system. So you might see more breakthrough infections with the Omicron variant, as well as reinfections from those that have gotten it before.
Mm-hmm.
So the notion of natural immunity is not a thing at all, much less with Omicron.
Yeah.
But they did mention that the getting a third booster with Moderna or Pfizer is likely to help you out big time.
Mm-hmm.
The Germany study shows that a third booster shot with either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines increases neutralizing ability of the antibodies to levels seen with the Delta variant, at least for several weeks after the booster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this might be something that helps out until they can maybe develop more, like a stronger vaccine to deal with Omicron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how the possibility yet, but that's
good
to see. But it also mentioned there are other parts of your immune system besides antibodies that can help ward off disease, you know, your T cells and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I believe I also heard in the next couple of weeks is when that COVID pill is supposed to come out. And, you know, doctors will be able to actually start prescribing it, which will be good to hear. But I've, you know, it's going to, a big deal about this is, you know, what are the effects of Omicron going to be? Because what we have been continually hearing from the people in South Africa is that the symptoms that Omicron causes are considerably milder than the ones that Delta does. Mostly feeling like more of a cold than anything else. A lot of people don't even lose their sense of smell or taste. But, you know, is that going to stay, you know, is it going to stay that way? Or, you know, are we going to find out, like, you know, it stays dormant in your system and then, like, months later it just kills you? I mean, we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, ironically, if that is the case, that you know, it only causes mild symptoms and doesn't, you know, cause any serious damage, you kind of want this variant to end up being able to proliferate faster and become the dominant one, because then that will mean that, you know, it spreads a lot faster than Delta, and that would make it that, you know, herd immunity would become much faster. But, you know, we'll just have to see. In the meantime, if you have not gotten, please get vaccinated. And if you are vaccinated, if you feel like you need it, consider getting a booster shot.
And do what you were doing last winter. Keep wearing your mask. You know, keep a distance from people, especially if they're not masked. Wash your hands. You know, all that kind of stuff, because we had one of the lowest rates of flu last year that we've ever had, because people were safe. The things they don't do, which is, you know, don't sneeze at people and rub your snot all over your hands and on various things around you. All that kind of stuff that leads to people getting sick and unfortunately dying during the holidays.
But, yeah, so, you know, basically you know what to do: social distance, wash your hands, wear a mask. We already have all the tools that are here, so just keep using them. All right. So those are our two, COVID stories for the night. So we're going to go ahead and put that back into the garage, roll down the garage door. Tune in next week, and we will almost assuredly have more news to talk about. Hopefully it's better. But it is getting to winter time, and we all know that COVID kind of thrives in winter, so we'll see. Anyway, now on to other news. Mark Meadows is suing the January 6th committee to block subpoena enforcement. So for those you don't know, Mark Meadows is currently considered a person of interest by the committee. They want him to come testify, answer questions. And he was
started complying.
Yeah, he started to comply, and then for whatever reason, he said nope and decided to turn around. And now he's trying to block the enforcement of the subpoena, which I don't think is going to work.
Yeah, his lawyer cited concerns about executive privilege, which Trump has tried to do a number of times, and that has not worked for him in any part of this. But yeah, some of the documents that he provided already were quite fascinating. There's one talking about a whole plan about suspending things under a national security threat and sort of trying to get rid of the results of the election.
Yeah.
And then find a way to do like a paper ballot election. Well, afterwards, it's like, this makes zero sense.
Yeah.
Other than people that are desperate to find an avenue that they could turn things in their favor.
And now we know that apparently they had a PowerPoint presentation as well. So, yeah. Just fucking hell. Next up, another news. The Biden administration has announced staging a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics.
Is over the Uyghur stuff.
Yeah.
As they call, citing the Chinese government's quote-unquote ongoing genocide and crimes against humanity in the Xinjiang region.
Yep. Plus Xinjiang, but yeah. So, important thing you have to know, the Winter Olympics are by invitation only, so the diplomatic boycott doesn't really mean anything, really. It's more of a statement than anything that can actually be effective. Furthermore, there are two European powers, Italy and France, have both said that they are not going to boycott the Olympics. And of course, the Chinese themselves are like, well, who gives a shit?
Yeah. But yeah, U.S. is just going to send less non-essential personnel.
Yeah.
To the games.
Yeah, it was like, it's really, it's a bunch And it's also kind of bullshit when you realize that the United States recently approved a bunch of weapons to give to Saudi Arabia to help them in their ongoing genocidal war in Yemen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's mostly a bunch of bullshit is what I'm trying to say. And that's not like a sort of hand what the Chinese government is doing to the Uyghur people in Xinjiang. It's mostly just a thing of, yeah, you're trying to make this big sort of moral stand, but you're doing the exact same shit in helping Saudi Arabia do the exact same shit in Yemen. So what's your excuse? But anyway. Next up, the Presidential Commission on the Supreme Court has put out their report. What is their report? Oh, Chris, tell them.
So this is a big report that they have had being worked on since, I think, April, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it, on the main topic you would expect on the topic of enlarging the court, they don't really take any position on that, but do say that Congress does have the power to enlarge the court.
Yeah, I mean,
doesn't necessarily make a recommendation on it.
Yeah.
They do suggest that there is on term limits that a constitutional amendment would likely be necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And points to the practical difficulties of implementing term limits at the same time that there are sitting justices with life terms on the court. The report does take position on lesser topics, endorsing at least an advisory code of ethics for the justices, advising changes in management of the court's emergency docket, and recommending that all public audio of court arguments and opinion announcements be simultaneously released.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're supposed to be putting that out, I think, officially pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully it'll lead us to some goddamn changes.
Yeah.
Because right now our system is looking awfully rickety.
Yeah.
And not nearly dynamic enough to deal with the challenges of the 21st century. So, you know, throw that traditionalist bullshit out the window. It's time for some serious fucking reform. There is says that the Supreme Court has to be only 9 justices. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was fewer than 9 justices when it started, and it just sort of grew over the years. There's nothing in the Constitution that says it can't be 11 or 13 or even 15. Hell, it can be 21 if it do.
There's a lot of things, legends around the Supreme Courts and the way they do things that are more just, you know, performative bullshit than anything that's actual rules.
Yeah, like that whole thing about how they don't let cameras in there.
And was it the Strom Thurmond rule?
Yeah.
About not electing or voting on a new justice in an election year.
Mm-hmm.
It only gets used to stop the other side from doing it.
Yeah, it's a lot of bullshit. But speaking of justice, the Justice Department is suing the state of Texas over its new redistricting plans. You can probably guess why.
Yeah. Alleging that they put minority voters at a disadvantage. Saying our complaint today alleges that the redistricting plans approved by the Texas state legislature and signed into law by the governor will deny Black and Latino voters an equal opportunity to participate in the voting process and to elect representatives of their choice.
Yep.
Their complaint also alleges that several of those districts were drawn with discriminatory intent.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, people have been saying this shit about Texas for years now. And by years, I mean decades.
Yeah, and this thing is a common thing that happens as far as, you know, drawing them to favor your side, but you're supposed to, you know, draw it in such a way that it's not like, oh, here's all the neighborhoods of, you know, Black and Latino people and Asians. Oh, there's they're separated, or they're conveniently packed with a majority white crowd so that their votes mean less. That kind of stuff. You're not supposed to make it super obvious on that kind of stuff, but there's a whole thing against, you know, having a like bipartisan group that does this, or an independent group to get the, you know, the partisan nature of these things removed. That, yeah, just causes all these problems in so many states. North Carolina's delaying their midterm elections to some degree because they've had to redo it again.
And, you know, they're trying to pull the same shit down here in Georgia as well. So yeah, it's an ongoing problem. But, now for some news that's just fucking hilarious. Funny enough, kind of ties into a thing I was talking about with, you know, making satire of public figures and not having to deal with, you know, getting sued for emotional damage or shit. Representative Devin Nunes, who you may know as the guy who tried to sue Twitter because one guy made a Twitter account claiming to be his cow and how bad of a farmer he was. Yeah. Devin Nunes is resigning from Congress to be CEO of Trump's media company.
Yeah. He is resigning by the end of this year. So not even running out his term.
Yep.
Which he is in the middle of his 10th term. Yeah, so sure. At the same time, while he's still, I think, in that suit with the Twitter account.
Yeah. Because apparently that thing, I'm guessing lawyers have convinced him to keep giving him money.
Yeah.
Because they're like, no, we can totally do this thing. And yeah. Anyway. Oh, yeah. That new media company, there's a merger that's being investigated by the SEC and FIRA, isn't there?
Yep. The whole thing is that there was a merger created to set this whole thing up to create the Digital World Acquisition Company. But that they said on Monday in a filing that has received certain preliminary fact-finding inquiries from regulatory authorities with which it is cooperating, which includes the SEC and the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, which helps oversee the securities market. So we'll see how this whole thing goes.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think the DWAC is a so-called SPAC, a special purpose acquisition company that is, I've seen as something that the SEC is looking into with more scrutiny for future rulings. So something's going on with that stuff. I don't know exactly what it is, but.
We'll find out. Next up, we got our entertainment to talk about. That Cowboy Bebop live action version came out and it kind of flopped. Well, they announced after like 3 weeks on the air that they will not be renewing it for a second season.
That's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for the actors who were involved.
Yeah, it was a pretty good show that needed, but it needed a second season to kind of find its footing.
Yeah.
Because I did like what they were doing with the first season, but it's a show that has a rabid audience that doesn't like anything, any changes or anything.
Yeah.
I think a series that was doing some cool stuff that probably had some difficulties in getting it out there, because I think they did have the period where they just couldn't do the show because John Cho hurt himself on set.
Also, let's be honest, there are some things that work in the anime that just wouldn't work in real life, in live action.
Yeah, though they kind of are doing their own thing, so they don't necessarily do a ton of the stuff in there.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a lot of less like space focused parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more just on the whatever the planet is that they are needing to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the way they kind of end the first season, it's kind of the way they end in the anime, with the showdown with Vicious.
Yeah.
But they do set up some stuff after that. That is kind of where Ed shows up in full force. Yeah. It's like, this character might be too ridiculous for the show.
Yeah. Again, Edward doesn't really work outside of the original anime. Because the character is just too weird and zany to do in live action, honestly.
Yeah.
But we got some other news here. Paramount. So that's some good news.
Yeah, they're doing what they're calling linear channels.
Yeah.
18 linear channels, including some that are just 24-hour streams of Star Trek, SpongeBob, and Paw Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just want to chill out and have that go without having to pick the specific channel or specific episodes to start with and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Paramount Plus is one of the services that just kind of keeps playing episodes, or if it's like Netflix, where it's like, if you're not doing anything for like 3 or 4 episodes, like, are you still watching?
Mm-hmm.
Stops everything. It's like, shut the fuck up. If it's going for 4 episodes, you're probably, chilling.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's 18 of those, 24 hours a day. Some are just focused on genres like kids and family fun, crime and justice, and reality TV competitions. But yeah, that's a neat idea. I don't know that it's gonna do much for the service.
Because
they're trying a lot with Paramount Plus to get people to pay attention if, Star Trek, the new Star Trek stuff isn't doing it for you, or any of the specific sort of shows they have are doing it for you.
Yeah. But. Next up, we got a couple trailers here. For those of you that don't know, the Game Awards happened. I think it was yesterday. We'll be talking all about that on Day Zero on Sunday. But they gave us some trailers for some TV and movie stuff. And the first one we got was a trailer. Well, actually, I think it was like one of the last things they showed on the show. But we got a first look trailer for Halo the series for Paramount Plus, which is the live action television series based around the Halo games.
And from what I've seen, these are very much non-canonical, what they're doing here. They'll probably be things that are based off of story points from the games, but a lot of it is not going to be, because it just doesn't make sense for a live-action show.
Mm-hmm.
But you can definitely tell that they're putting a lot of budget into this.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's going to turn out to be good or not, who knows? Because I will say, from what I've played of the Halo games, Master Chief is not a thrilling character.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a cipher for you to kill aliens.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's coming out next year. Supposed to be on Paramount Plus. So, yeah, that's how that goes.
Yeah, and finally, last thing for the night, we got a trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the movie for the surprisingly decent Sonic the Hedgehog movie that came out. And shocked everyone, because by all accounts, that movie should have been an absolute trash fire.
Going to be, until they redid the Sonic character model. That at least made it more faithful and made it easier for them to take it seriously. But now they got Tails in here. They got Knuckles.
Yep. voiced by Idris Elba.
Yeah. Tails is voiced by Colleen O'Shaughnessy.
Mm-hmm. I think she's actually been Tails' voice actor for a while now.
Yeah. But yeah, now Robotnik has found his way back. Mm-hmm. Eggman, I forget which one it is in here, but he has found his way back from the Mushroom Planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now bald with the big ass mustache, the red jacket and all that. Tails shows up, has his biplane and all that, runs into Sonic, and then mm-hmm. Knuckles shows up at some point in the trailer. Seems like Elba's doing a pretty good voice for that. So looks like it could be poised to be a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is, what's the date on that one? April 8th, mm-hmm. 2022 in theaters. So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, it definitely left an impression, and it's already gotten millions of views on YouTube. So obviously people definitely want to see it. And it kind of looks like plot-wise, they're kind of taking both of the plots of Sonic 2 and Sonic 3 and kind of mashing them together.
And they're kind of just doing more what they did in the first game, or the first movie.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not sure if the Master Emerald is showed what was obviously supposed to be a Chaos Emerald in the trailer, but...
Yeah, they do show Chaos Emerald.
Yeah. Of course, we'll figure out how he actually made his way back. It looks like that's about... Oh, like we got a show. Yeah, damn, we finished before Teresa could get here. well, all right, that's fine. Actually, those of you who are listening probably have noticed we're recording this on a Friday instead of a Saturday. That's because Chris has to work late tomorrow, so we had to record this earlier than that. But yeah, okay. So, with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want to be on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Play, RSS, or archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you think of. And, it's getting to be that time of the year, folks. We got a bunch of holidays, including our games of the year. You should start probably seeing those show up on the site around the week, Christmas week. And, of course, we're also going to do stuff for the end of the year as well. We'll let you all know that as we cross that bridge when we come to it. Until then, I have been your host, Brandon Perkins. Thank you, Chris Logie, for being with me as always. Tune in next week. We hopefully will have the whole crowd together this time. And I would like to remind all our listeners to stay safe out there, especially when it's getting to be winter, and encourage you, if you have not been vaccinated, to encourage getting vaccinated. If you are vaccinated and you think you might need it, and you're in an area where they're clinically available, consider getting a booster. And join us next week, everybody. Bye.